Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're back talking about the Billy Meier case today. As you know by now, Billy Meier is actually an 81-year-old man. He lives in Switzerland in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti. He's an incredibly prolific author. He's written over 50 books. One of those books that we'll talk about today is called The Might of Thoughts. And the book's amazing. I can't even tell you how many times I've read it. I've been through it, I think, 8 times. And I could probably devote the rest of my life to studying this book in order to really, really understand it. Now, Billy's got 50 books of that quality. And if we step back a little bit, it's important to understand something about Billy's spirit form. And if you've never heard this show before, that term might even not be familiar to you. Every human being has a consciousness, a spiritual consciousness, and a material consciousness. Your material consciousness is who you are in this lifetime, what your personality is today. 21 days after your father's sperm fertilized the egg of your mother, a spirit form came into your body and it landed in the middle of your brain in an area called the superior colliculus. And the superior colliculus integrates all your senses, all your thoughts, all your feelings, your smells, your tastes, your hearing, everything. And the spirit form is this energy. It's called a Telstock in the German. It's supposed to be a fragment of the universal consciousness. It can never be sick. It can never be harmed. It's not vulnerable to anything. It is the wonder of all wonders. It will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong if you've learned to pay attention to it. Now, Billy also has a spirit form. His spirit form, they refer to sometimes as Nokodamian. It's 9.6 billion years old. It allegedly was created on a planet called Sadar, which is in the Warren star system, in a galaxy called the Lyran Galaxy, which is about 3.8 billion light years from Earth. The spirit form is 9.6 billion years old. So the spiritual consciousness of Edward Albert Meyer is 9.6 billion years old, and it has reincarnated on other worlds and other planets. It's known as the Universal Prophet. However, it's incarnated on the Earth as well, and it's incarnated as a prophet and also as non-profit incarnations. This spirit form, according to the Meyer information, was in Socrates at about 470 BC. And Socrates is one of the philosophers credited as the founders of Western philosophy. The spiritual consciousness incarnated as Aristotle in about 384 BC, who was a Greek philosopher, scientist. It incarnated in a man called Dr. Johann Georg Faust, who was an astrologer, an alchemist of the German Renaissance. It incarnated also as Galileo Galilei in about 1564, who was an astronomer, a physicist, an engineer, a philosopher, a mathematician in Italy. And he played a major role in the scientific revolution of about the 17th century, incarnated as Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, one of the most prolific composers of the classical era. It also incarnated as Mendelssohn, who was a German pianist, organist, and conductor. And before the incarnation of Billy Meyer, this spirit form incarnated as Rasputin, a mystical faith healer, who was a trusted friend of the family of Nicholas, the Tsar of the Russian Empire. So this is a very ancient spirit form. Now, when Billy was just a young boy in 1943, he would get these telepathic messages to meet with an extraterrestrial human named Svath. And Billy was just about 4 years old, and he would get this cooling sensation on his forehead. He would see this visual image in his mind of this man named Svath, who would tell him to go out to a certain place in the forest. And then out of the sky would come this very strange silvery pear-shaped craft, which would sit down on the ground. And Billy would explain later in his contact reports that it felt like he was lifted up by ghostly hands and brought into the ship, and Svath would take him up into lower Earth orbit and teach him. One of the things that Svath would teach Billy is who he had been in his previous lifetimes. But he focused on the lifetimes where he was a prophet. And he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each one of these lifetimes, he taught an ancient universal teaching called the Teaching of the Spirit, which was eventually distorted into the religions that we have today. Interestingly, as kind of a side note, part of the lineage of this spirit form was an individual named Semyasa, who incarnated both 389,000 years ago and fathered a person named Adam, also incarnated roughly 11,000 years ago or so, and had an offspring of another person called Adam. So there were two Semyasas, there were two Adams, and the second Semyasa came during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria, the end of that era, which was, I think, was about 13,000 years ago or something like that, when the great cataclysm knocked the Earth off of its axis. Boy, I'm covering a lot of stuff today at a high level. Atlantis and Lemuria, the civilization was here about 130,000 years ago, and it lasted a long time. It was a very highly evolved civilization. It was populated by people mostly of off-world descent. The leader of Atlantis was a guy named Atlant, who was of obvious Lyran descent. He had broad shoulders and pasty white skin. And his wife came with him. And there was another fellow who came who was the leader of Lemuria, or Mu, as it's called. And that started in the area of the Gobi Desert. There were two cities, one underground, or both underground, actually. There was a city on top of the ground and two underground cities, the Agartha Alpha and the Agartha Beta. They were connected by tunnel systems. Atlantis and Lemuria was on an island continent, which existed somewhere near our equator in the area of the Atlantic Ocean. These two civilizations had a great war, which ended up destroying the Earth, practically knocking it off its axis. Civilization reappeared again on the Earth about 12,000 years ago. Unfortunately, when civilization reappeared on the Earth, another group of extraterrestrial humans that were not so benevolent here also appeared. They were called the Giza Intelligences. And they eventually went underground when a leader named Eris took control. And they lived in these old cubicle constructions far below the Great Pyramid. That was about 73,000 years old, and they used religion to control the people of the Earth. And one of these leaders of the Giza Intelligence was the God of the Old Testament, which we call sometimes Jehovah today. So as you can imagine, the Meyer material is very, very controversial for whatever reason. I don't know. It's very, you know, sometimes when people are confronted with facts, they will rebel most intensely. I believe it's because of the cognitive dissonance that this information has created in their consciousness. And one of the profound things that we learn from the Meyer material is the power of our own consciousness and the power of our own thoughts. And the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer is called the Universal Prophet. And what the Universal Prophet does is it comes back into worlds to reestablish order and rationality. One of the interesting things is one of the incarnations, Nocodemian, okay, which is this, when we think of Billy Meyer's spirit form, we're talking about Nocodemian. Now, Nocodemian came back from the Arahat Athrasata spirit level for the sake of his peoples who were not following creational laws and commandments at all. He came back to bring reason and rationality to the people of Lyra Vega, and this was about 12 million years ago. He recognized his people's lack of understanding, and he had to actually use force because the people of Lyra Vega had degenerated to such a level. They were murderous, and they were conquering worlds, and they were enslaving people. And they had the audacity to violently spread out in the universe and name themselves the representatives of creation. This was an insane idea that they had tried to actualize. They were attacking foreign planetary system. They were murdering millions of people or enslaving them. And Nocodemian was faced with a choice of either leaving his people to degenerate into universal monsters or to put a stop to all this murderous and power-hungry activity. And one of the things that Nocodemian did is he brought together a tremendous military force, as well as, well, we'll get into that, but he brought together a very powerful military force, and he ordained sterility on these people, from Lyra Vega. And somehow Arahat Athrasata as well was involved in this, because the people from Lyra Vega who then passed away, their spirit forms had to stay a long time in the realm of the other side before they could reincarnate in physical bodies. So this is a tremendous story. I just say alleged because I can't prove it, but I've been studying for years, and I think it's reality, and I think it's fantastic and amazing. So the spirit form, and every human has a spirit form, and the typical Earth human spirit form is about 4.5 million years old, but Edward Albert Meyer's spirit form is about 9.6 billion years old. And we're going to talk about a book called The Might of Thoughts today, and specifically some very interesting things in this book. And I'll go ahead and bring my guest on, since it looks like I'm only going to have one guest. I thought I was going to get another one today. And this is Carol Steves. Carol, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. It's trying to keep from blowing away. It's really windy here today.
Yeah. It's very windy here, too. And warm.
Oh. Yeah, it's chilly here, but one day it's 80 and the next it's 40, so it's Colorado for you.
We've had the extremes in the weather all over the place, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is because of the destruction of our forests. And I've done some study on this. I don't claim to be an expert, but it seems that our forests moderate the weather. In the summertime, they produce shade, which I think is obvious to people. But in the wintertime, they stop a lot of the light from reflecting back. And this causes a little bit extra warmth to stay in there. And when the wind blows over the top of a forest, it causes turbulence on the top of the forest, which tends to form clouds and bring rain and stop the the droughts, and the roots of all the plants stop erosion. So the forests help keep it from getting too hot or too cold. They stop the droughts. Everything in creation, in nature, is here for a purpose. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And we're destroying it. So.
And we're destroying
the trees. So fast.
And the reason we're destroying it is one thing that Spoff said to Billy is that the people of the earth no longer understand the creation. So let me just rattle off a few things about the creation quickly so people can be oriented again. Creation is spirit in its purest form and immeasurable in its wisdom, knowledge, love, harmony, and truth. It's the universal consciousness. The creation is the universe's internal and external body. The creation pervades everything, and everything pervades creation. It has a oneness within itself, and within this oneness occurs all life and all evolution allotted to it. And here's something that I didn't know, and I don't understand it yet. It says creation has the identical development and evolutionary processes of every life form. However, its values of time are anchored in very high values. Like one of the evolutionary steps of the creation lasts a great time. And if I'm not incorrect, I think it's about 315 trillion years or something to that effect. A couple of interesting things that the Goblet of Truth says about the creation is for the purpose of all things are regulated, determined through the creation and its laws and recommendations. We'll talk about the laws and recommendations again today. And know that you are protected against all evil and all calamity if you follow the laws and recommendations of creation. And protected, I don't think means that you don't have any harm at all. It just means if you follow the laws of creation, like are taught in the Might of Thoughts, and I think this whole book is really just teaching us how to control our thoughts, how to be neutral, positive in our thoughts. Are you guys in Colorado studying the Might of Thoughts book right now, or are you studying something else?
No, right now we're studying The Way to Live, but I have read the Might of Thoughts. Yeah. Yes.
I love that. I love that book, The Way to Live.
Yes, it's a very good book too. Yes, it is.
What are you guys specifically kind of looking at right now in The Way to Live?
You know, you caught me off guard. I don't remember what page we're on. But,
okay.
You know, Billy covers a little bit of everything in there. You know, you never know what's actually around the bend in that book. You know, it's a very practical book, and I think it's a good book for people to start with if they're just beginning.
One of the things that he talks about in the Way to Live is striving. And I wish I'd understood this concept many, many years ago, because striving, literally, we can't have happiness unless we're striving. And that's not something I realized many, many years ago. I wish I had, because I would have been a happier person.
I think that's common with young people, though. I do.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
So page 102 in The Way to Live, let me read this real quickly, just part of it anyway, not the whole page. This is, striving creates the life right up to the being. Striving means delectation in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. Affliction is inhibited striving and inhibited life, but inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution and stagnation. Hopelessness, and this is what I'm trying to get to. If you feel hopelessness, grief, confusion, irrationality, joylessness, and cognitionless, unpeace, disharmony, lovelessness, etc., you need to pick up your striving. Because these are caused by inhibited striving. You know what's really weird is I've had times in my life where I really had to pick my striving up big time. Have you ever experienced that or not?
Oh, of course. I think everyone has. And I think when I said, you know, it seems to be more that way when we're young, a good example is when we're young, we view chores a lot of times as, you know, this terrible thing we have to do.
Yeah.
We do everything we can to get out of it. We procrastinate.
Yeah.
We make excuses. We hide. You know, these are all the things
yeah.
kids do when they... And I have three sons, and I've told all of them, it's all in how you look at it. You know,
yeah.
once you realize that you gain satisfaction from striving,
mm-hmm.
I think you need people need both sides, though. They have to experience that misery, you know, and the self-loathing and everything that goes
yeah.
along with the lack of striving. And then once they finally get themselves motivated, because no one, of course, can do it for you. You have to do it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That relief, first, that's that instant relief that you have,
mm-hmm.
that you're finally doing something, you know, and then
yeah.
later you get to reap the benefits from striving. And I think that's something everyone has to learn, and it doesn't help that we live in a society that makes it sound like entertainment and play is the ultimate. That's all you should want. You should have a life where that's all you do. And any work
yeah.
is, you know, just pure drudgery. Of course, there's
when actually you need a balance, right?
Yes. Yeah, because it's hard to enjoy. Really, how can you savor the time off if that's all you have, the time to relax?
Exactly.
It no longer becomes
yeah.
that.
It's not special anymore or as special.
No. No, it isn't. So, yeah, I think that's something we talk about. We have kind of we have young people and older people in our group, and that's something we talk about a lot, is that subject.
Mm-hmm.
And also...
Mm-hmm.
It seems that a big theme in our group, and I think it's because of the sign of the times, is just dealing with what's happening in the world, the future for what's in store for the younger people when it comes to jobs and and for the older people because we don't. We don't talk about retirement, really. The people I've seen retire don't know what to do with themselves, unless they have projects, you know, that they're going to go out and do. A lot of people are rather lost once they retire. But we're living in a world where now that's not really even going to be an option for most people. They're going to have to continue to work.
Oh, no. I'll probably always work, and I do have Eve. I call her Eve, but I think her name is really Ev. So, Evelyn, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I am.
Hi,
Your
Evelyn.
Voice sounds good.
Hi, Carol.
It's nice to finally talk to you, like really talk to you.
I know. I decided I was kind of late to the show, but I decided, you know, I'm going to quickly call in. So I'm going to listen to you guys for a little while and see if I can jump in somewhere.
Okay, you want me to... just leave you as you are, and then you can jump in. You're not muted, so if you make weird sounds, everyone's going to hear you.
You know me and my weird sounds.
Well, I haven't heard you make too many, so I'm not too worried about it. Okay, we were talking about striving and talking about the Way to Live book. So let me read a little bit more about striving here. If you don't strive, and you know, I developed a system let me throw this out here, and maybe we can talk a little bit about this, where, like, on my days off, I'm going 15 minutes of usually working on the Meyer material and then 15 minutes of working around the house. Have you guys ever developed little systems like that to keep you kind of moderated?
Motivated?
Motivated, moderated, yeah. However you want to look.
Yes.
Do you guys yeah. have, share with me, if you have a system, share it with me.
Well, I don't have a system right now. My life is, the last year has been just crazy, and I go like crazy, and then I kind of collapse for a while to recharge.
Exactly.
So I don't have really a system, but I understand what you're talking about. But if I do feel lazy, and, you know, I'll just go, just jump into something, and boom, I'm off, you know?
Right. I have this little system I've worked out. For a lot of times, like 15 minutes studying the Meyer material, 15 minutes cleaning the garage, 15 minutes back to the Meyer material, 15 minutes doing something else. Or sometimes I'll break it up into half an hour chunks. Carol, do you have a system like that or anything similar?
I do, but mine's longer. Because I work from home, I usually do all my mental work in the morning when I'm fresh. That seems to be the best time for me to write or do paperwork. And I usually try to stop that by noon, and then I spend the afternoon doing the physical stuff I need to do because, we have a little farm. But in the summertime, I have to flip it because it's hot out. So I have to do the manual stuff in the morning while it's cool, and my more cerebral stuff in the afternoon. Sometimes that can be a bit challenging because I get sleepy after working outside, but it works pretty well.
Well, tell me about your farm.
Well, it's just a little. It's about 2.5 acres, and
that's exactly what we got. 2.5 acres.
Yeah,
do you have animals?
You mentioned that, and I was. Yeah, well, we have chickens right now. We're thinking about, and we raise both birds for eggs and meat birds. So we get to harvest them every summer.
You know,
I
couldn't do it. Me personally,
I would have
overpopulated chickens. Oh, you haven't done
it? I haven't yet myself. I've been told I should, and I keep saying I will, but I haven't done it yet. I do the plucking. I pluck them and I cook them.
I would have overpopulated chickens. I would have to give them away or something. I would have chickens over
there.
I'm
true.
Serious.
Yeah,
I would have hundreds of eggs probably. You know? I would. So, that's just my way. But
it's nice though that we know we're eating chickens that are raised humanely. They get to roam all over our property and eat bugs, and you know we take very good care of them, and they have a happy life. And then it's over as quickly as possible. So, and then they're in our freezer. So,
do you know
Mark,
that the play
just bring their necks, Mark?
Oh, isn't that wonderful? The Playaren, they have a scientific way to grow meat like at the petri dish level. So animals don't have to be killed anymore. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, that's coming, you know. They're already,
yeah.
That's in process already. So
yeah.
That's soon. We won't have to kill for chicken cutlets. I'm kind of wondering, though, is it always just a cutlet or... You know, are they going to grow them so it looks like a drumstick too? I'm kind of curious about that.
there was a company, and I saw on a magazine this year, I forget the name of the company. I remember the guy on the cover. He's kind of an Indian guy with kind of some glasses, let's say. And they are taking investments. Now, I didn't pursue any farther than that. But I was very encouraged by seeing that. Like you said, it's in process. It's going to happen. And we won't have to kill animals anymore. Because one of the things I say is this is the planet of unnecessary death. And if you drive around here, you'll see so many dead deer, so many dead raccoons, so many dead animals all over. And this is this whole trend that's taking place on the earth right now. And we were, I don't know if we're going to get the chance to talk about it that much, but one of the things people don't realize is that World War III is already being planned. World War II was planned at the end of World War I. When they created the Treaty of Versailles, they knew it would lead to World War II. The elite, the global elite, are very, very evil. They are planning World War III. They want it to between the United States, Russia, and China.
I thought it was going to be World War IV. I thought World War III has already happened.
It has, but people don't realize that, so I use the conventional terms.
Okay.
Yeah, World War II was actually World War III. Now, Billy could tell you why. I don't remember all what. There was another war that happened. It was really a true world war. Do you remember that, Carol? I don't exactly remember all that.
I don't remember which. I was trying to remember the other day which war was considered.
It was probably
it was
before
considered,
World
and I couldn't,
War One.
Yeah, and I couldn't remember which war it was. And I meant to look it up, and then I didn't. We were talking about it, I think, in our group, actually. We were talking about that. But you know, we're all victims of political ponerology, so, unfortunately.
Political what? Say that again.
Ponerology. That's the science
of...
That's the science on the nature of evil adjusted for political purposes.
Wow.
So...
Can you elaborate on
that? Yeah, there's a book written
that.
About it. Well,
what's it called?
It's called Political Ponerology, and a man named Andrew Lobachowski wrote it. And you've heard of the website Sotnet, Sign of the Times, probably.
No, I haven't.
There's a website that has a lot of good information on it called Sotnet. It's S-O-T-T-N-E. I think he's one of the founders of it. And political ponerology is the study of the founders and supporters of oppressive political regimes. So Lebowski's approach analyzes the common factors that lead to the propagation of man's inhumanity to man. Morality and humanism cannot long stand with the predications of this evil. So the nature of this evil and its insidious effect on both individuals and groups.
It's depressing.
You know, they just, it's,
It's depressing.
What'd you say? Oh, it is.
Depressing.
It is. That it is depressing. Yeah. And I think when a lot of us find the Meyer material, we find out just how, you know, manipulated everything is. It's kind of shocking, actually. And it takes some adjusting. Some time to get adjusted to just how evil people can be. It's breathtaking.
Yes, absolutely.
It is.
The elites want a world government, a cashless society. They want to create an Orwellian state where everything is controlled. There's a draconian control. There's propaganda, surveillance, misinformation. That's where we are now. They want microchip population, put a microchip in you. Without that, you won't be able to buy food. It's that. They want a world central bank. They want a world army. They already have what's called the deep space platform. That's talked about in Figure Bulletin number 2. They also talk about microchipping in Figure Bulletin number 2. This is where we're headed. This whole thing in Syria is the precursor to this. So they want to create this world government. They want a technocracy, a control of society that will be controlled by a group of technical experts. They want to take away all your rights and freedoms.
Yep, where technology is more important than humanity.
Yes. They want to merge people with machines. Okay, this is transhumanism, and Billy talks about in Contact Report 251. It's called The Rise of the Robot People. People will willingly have their arms and legs removed and to be attached to machines. They want to restrict your travel. You will lose the right to own and drive your own vehicles. They want to take away all privacy. they want to bring about the destruction of all religion. That's probably actually a good thing. They want to just create this crazy tyranny. But, you know, it's funny. There are a few things that the elite understand, like the importance of reducing our population.
Yeah, and the problem with that I see is because of that, blended in with all this evil stuff, it has made any attempts to get people to understand that we need to control our numbers. They have this reaction that it's evil. And you know, I've often said, look, if we don't do it ourselves, it's going to be done for us, and it won't be humanely.
Yeah.
People don't seem to hear that. Anyway, people outside the Meyer material don't seem to hear it. They don't get it. They just lump it all in with, you know, that's a taking away of our freedoms to control our numbers. They don't understand the more of us there are, the more control there's going to be.
That's what we're heading for. So it's so critical.
And, you know, they're really marketing these chips as something desirable. That's how they're getting, you know, you've probably seen it. They're getting people to think it's cool to be able to walk into a bar and just not have your credit card with you, and you can just get drinks, and you don't have to, or go into a market, and you don't have to have any money or talk to anybody. You can just take what you want off the shelf and leave.
Crazy.
By having it.
It's so bizarre.
Yeah. It is.
There are people actually like this?
Yes.
Boy.
They already have the chips. There's a company, I think it's in Wisconsin, that they've already sold it. They make these chips, I think, and they've already sold it to their employees that, hey, have a chip in your wrist and you can get into the office. You don't have to have your key card. You can get drinks and snacks from the vending machines. You don't have to have any money. And they've all bought into it. And there's other, that's just one example. So.
Well, we're quickly coming to the time when we really need to master controlling our thoughts. And I have this little routine that I go through. Sometimes I go through it when I'm not even feeling like my thoughts are bad. I tell myself I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm cheerful, I'm relaxed, I'm enthusiastic, I'm thankful, I'm in harmony, I persist, I persevere, I endure, I am calm, and I'm satisfied. And I think much of our negative thinking comes from lack of confidence. Have you ever traced back your negative thinking, Carol?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Well, I mean, in order to overcome it, I think a lot of times that you have to. And you have to notice what triggers it, and you have to notice. I mean, Billy said once, and this really struck me when I read this, he said, when you have memories from your childhood, and they surface, and maybe it's something you haven't thought about for a while, and I think most of us, if we're paying attention, have had this experience where something will happen to you that's negative, something will make you feel negative, and suddenly this memory comes back to you.
Oh,
yeah. If you pay attention to those memories and analyze them, a lot of times you can understand where that negative thinking began, what started it, what misperception or programming. And I think the really hard stuff, though, to work out is the stuff that was programmed into us before we're conscious as very young children, because that's the hardest to get rid of, I think, from what I understand, because it happened before we were able to really think. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There's something that Billy, he calls them ideas, IDEAS. And he says, we need to think through our ideas so that they eventually become ideals. Now, ideals are completely thought through, completely developed. The ideas ending with an S, are not completely developed. And he said these ideas confuse the thoughts. They make the thoughts go from one extreme to another. They cause a misdirection of the thoughts. They trigger emotions. Trigger is that German word Auslösen. They can even lead to murder and manslaughter. So one of the things that we need to do is completely think through our ideas, work through them, and we need to recognize what are called values and unvalues in them. Did we talk about that at all last time, Karen?
We didn't actually. You brought it up, but I don't think we actually covered it. But that's where,
okay,
you know, the first thing I thought when you said that is that's where I find meditation extremely helpful for that.
Okay.
That, yeah, that after I meditate, because it, you know, really slows things down and you have insights. And that's why, you know, we're encouraged to sit quietly when we finish our meditation, because we have insights. And of course, there's all different kinds of meditation. I meditate when I garden. I have lots of insights and I think things through. Those quiet tasks we do with our hands, where we're just solitary, those are great for work, for thinking through our ideas. And then meditation serves that purpose too. Once we're done with no thought, a lot of times these things come to the surface, or sometimes even during the meditation when we're supposed to be having no thought, things will float up and, you know, for something to ponder. And
yeah, I'm so glad you bring up meditation.
Yeah.
I've been neglecting it again. Let me talk about
the unvalues. Yeah, it's easy
to do. Oh, I know. We are told to recognize the values and the unvalues. So we need to remove the unvalues in our ideas. So an unvalue is something negative that we've over time began to value. So we have these thought patterns with unvalues in them. Some of the things that can be unvalues, they can require months, even years to change. So I'll give you a few of the unvalues would be, for example, inability to have deep feelings for others. A pathological angriness is another unvalue. A lack of logical decisions, a lack of rational conduct, a frequent change of sexual partner, boredom, manipulative behavior, having a hate mentality, a lack of empathy. So these are some of the unvalues that are often characteristic of sociopaths or psychopaths. So when we get those ideas up there, they have unvalues in them. And have you ever noticed that when you have an idea that has an unvalue in it, you just rotate and you think about that again and again and again and again. And it's like you can't stop thinking about it. That's one of the red flags, right? You've probably experienced it. I know I have.
I have,
you
of
can't
course.
Literally
your
churn,
your mind churns. Your mind
yes.
churns. Yeah.
Elaborate. Yep. Go ahead and continue.
Oh, well, I was just going to say what, you know, we all have our own unique personalities and things to overcome. But for me, one of the big ones was that if someone said something negative toward me about myself, it must be true. And
uh-huh.
I had to struggle with that one. You know, knowing yourself, learning how to say, to examine yourself and say, is this true or not? And to be able to discard it is one thing, but sometimes because of the way we're brought up, if someone says something negative, you may be conditioned to accept that to be true. And that can cause that churning. Yeah. It causes all kinds of problems.
It causes like a repetition of thinking. And those thoughts, they run out of control. And the more they rotate, the more miserable you get.
Exactly.
And I literally think that's what drives people into insanity.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the things I tell people, tell myself, is look at your thoughts. Are they producing negative feelings? A lot of times those feelings, those thoughts, those ideas with unvalues will produce a negative feeling. And, you know, it said, Semyase, in Contact Report 10, she said, the spirit is the wonder of all wonders. It never sleeps. It never dies. It will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong if you've learned to pay attention to it. So, and the Meyer material says the feelings come out of the thoughts. So if you're having these negative feelings, and that could be a sign of negative thinking. So it's one of the important things to keep in mind anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What do you find the same pattern?
Oh, yeah. I think it's universal. I think that's, you know, and so that's one of the biggest thing. That's one of the biggest things we all need to master is being able to control that. And once you do, and you find you get better at it, it's so freeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that it's a progression. It's almost like you're able to dissolve it. That eventually, when a negative thought comes in, you can just look at it and say, "Oh, look at this. Here I am thinking this." And you don't get down on yourself about it. You just, sometimes I even just laugh and go, "Oh, here it is," and I can just get rid of it. And that took a long time. That's a hard work. It takes a lot of hard work to do that. But when you finally realize what the end goal, I mean, you know, how you're going to feel once you're able to do it, the freedom that comes with it, that's such a motivator.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So,
I agree.
Yeah.
So how does this all relate to in your life? What manifests in it?
Well, if you're rotating negative thoughts like that, I have found that the next thing that starts to happen, if I allow them to continue, I'll have periods of emotion, like emotional outbursts. So these thoughts, they trigger emotions. And a lot of times you can start making bad decisions. I'm only speaking for myself, you know. I will lose my temper at something. I might even do something at work that's, not good. You know what I'm saying? You see a lot of people driving on the roads in this state of mind today. A lot of road rage. You know, it's really interesting. Gosh, my digressions are terrible. A lot of times I'll travel in the fast lane and maybe only be 5 or 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, and I'll just stay in the fast lane. And the people, at least around here, come right up on your tail and they tailgate you. And they just literally, they become unraveled because people are just lost in this rotation of negative thoughts, which leads to emotions being triggered. And you can start to make bad decisions when your emotions are triggered like that. At least that's what I've noticed. What do you think, Carol?
Yes. I think so. And I also think it can also cause, what I've noticed is if you have negative thoughts that you, especially if you interpret what other people are doing and you take it as personal, take it personally, or you interpret, let me give you a good example. Someone doesn't call you and you think,
right.
Well, you know, the healthy thing to do is go, oh, well, I have no idea why they're not calling me, and it's okay. And they will eventually. And if they don't, they don't. There's nothing I can do about that. And,
right.
And but we can put all these, or just people's, any action, I just use phone call as an example, but any mm-hmm. action that someone does, we have the power to interpret that. And what we're taught in the teaching is instead of doing that, is just to observe. Observe, just stand back and be neutral about it, which easier said than done.
Yeah.
But when you learn to do that, if you catch yourself starting to do that negative thing, all your negative, well, it's because they don't like me, it's I've done this or I've done that, or, you know, I said the wrong thing, or, you know, it may be none of those things. And we have to let that go and just observe.
Okay.
And even if we did, that's their issue, not ours.
Mm-hmm. Let me share something from my life. Let me share something from my life since we're kind of going down this path. All right. Now, in the world of software, in the world of software engineering, it's a new technology, okay? And it's a new occupation, and there's no regulation on it. So employers can give you anything to do, literally. And it can be totally outside your area of expertise to the level of absurdity. So that's the pressure that I deal with sometimes at work. You'll be given a task that is really totally outside your job description, outside of your area of knowledge. And then you have to go back to your boss and rationally and neutrally say, look, I have no background whatsoever in this task that you've assigned me. As a matter of fact, I would recommend that you don't allow me to even do this because it's going to be the first time I've ever done this. Let me give you an analogy. In the medical industry, you have a certain level of regulation where a doctor is like a heart surgeon, okay? So you're not going to go to a heart surgeon and say, hey, I want you to do this operation that deals with gynecological things, or you're not going to go to your foot doctor and say, you know, do this heart surgery, or go to your dentist and say, hey, we're going to need you to do brain surgery. But that kind of thing happens within the information systems field, and there's a lot of different areas of knowledge. So that's some of the challenges I've had this year, and it's not over.
Wow.
So I hope I've does that make
any
sense?
That sounds awful.
It's unbelievable. I'm telling you, beyond belief. It's beyond belief because you've got to go in a neutral, rational, unthreatening way, tell your boss, look, you really don't want me to rebuild your server because I've never rebuilt a server before. I'm a software engineer. I don't deal with hardware. So anyway, I digress.
So are they usually from are they from an IT background, or are they brought in as a manager from other disciplines? Because you'd think they would realize that there's specializations within the IT industry, just like anything.
Well, sometimes I think they're seeing what they can get away with because they don't want to hire another person that has that skill set because they're going to be, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
They'll dump something on. So there's this, I can't put my finger on it. Hopefully none of my people I work with hear this show, but it happens. Insanity, I'm telling you.
Well, it sounds totally irrational.
To me, it is. What can I say?
Oh, it is. Absolutely. Asking someone to do something highly specialized like that and they've never done it before.
Exactly.
I would be sweating bullets.
Literally,
not want to do it.
This is why I'm studying the mind of thoughts, okay? The real world has real life scenarios. And Eva, I know you've had some difficulties this year as well, right?
I think mine lies in the fact that I think in terms of the whole or the community, and it's blasted in my face, and it's the taking it personal, which gets me every time, that when people are absolutely just thinking about themselves, I kind of want to look at them and go, what's wrong with you? You know, and I do take it personally. When I am working for the whole, you know, and I think that that's been the real seat of the many problems that I've had lately. And I've discovered that people are very deceitful in their reactions and the way they communicate with me. That's hard too. I don't know if this relates. But
I think it does.
It's a huge thing where I think, Ev, you are so naive. But you know, I've been this way all my freaking life and I just can't change. So but it's so hard for me to think ill of others and where are they coming from really? And that's what I really should be doing. But then that puts me kind of in this negative kind of, you know, having to suspect, you know. I want to trust. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of that. I don't know. Maybe I'm blowing this up.
No, I don't think you are. I think that's common. And this, I think in the world we're raised in, where if we have to think negatively, it's considered, you know, I remember feeling this way. I would get red flags and think, oh, this is terrible that I think this. But then later
yes.
I would think, well, that was true, though. It was my inner warning system saying, danger, danger, Will Robinson, you know. And
it's so true. You know, I've had to learn to absolutely trust my instincts, because
yeah.
I would blame it on myself that I had these instincts. Oh, you're thinking negatively, or you know what I mean? You're not viewing this. But when it all comes out in the wash, it really was that way. I was right in the beginning.
Well, and I think that's what's so wonderful about the teaching and the mind of thoughts in particular, because I kept seeing that, you know, how certain things in the book that you need jump out at you and you really kind of grab onto them. And one of the things at one point that jumped out at me was we must see the negative and the positive. It's absolutely
mm-hmm.
necessary that we are able to, when we see the negative, also to just see it for what it is and be able to go to that neutral place and say, oh, this person is doing this thing, and not make it personal and not make it feel like it's against us personally, because chances are they're doing it to everybody, not just you.
And that's where I get caught up. That's where I get caught up, is I'm finding that I'm taking it personally. And, you know, yeah. It's a big, huge learning curve. I mean, to have to be in kind of oversight of like 50 people, you know, in living in close proximity of each other, has been this huge learning curve that I've been on for the last year. I can't even tell you. I mean, I just run around putting out fires and to then realize the next fire was actually bigger than the one I just put out.
Oh, yeah, it's tough, and we also get to that point where we learn some of the fires. We just go, oh, that's not for me to even deal with.
To put out,
that's so freeing when you go, and I'm not a bad person because I didn't run over and rescue and put out that fire. I just let it, you know,
let it burn
because. Yeah, we have to
get hooked into other people's dramas, you know,
yes.
concerning other people here. And in actuality, it was like freaking none of their business. And,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh,
yep.
I must have been living in a cave all this time. I mean, this experience is just like blasted me. Whew.
Yeah.
Well,
I can identify with that.
People, you know, being very, very nice to you, but in actual, this is what really hurts. It actually hurts. And then come to find out that there was a motive behind it. You know,
that
wasn't nice. Yeah.
Yes.
That is where personally, but then there's this maintenance guy that I work with, and he's going, don't take it personally. Don't take it personally, you know. But he's very... He doesn't have much compassion for people. So I don't want to go that far either. So I guess it's this particular situation is showing me, I think Mark and I were talking about it earlier today, in respecting that neutral positive position.
Yes.
And so, you know, the last year has been, you know, back and forth to a little bit too extreme, and maybe this is a learning experience to train me in order to get into that neutral, positive position more.
Well,
I think it does.
Yeah, that's true. It's like almost like riding a surfboard. That's how it always feels to me. Like finding that balance to be able to ride those waves, you know, without falling off. And but you do kind of go back and forth until you find the right spot. And you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you get there, it's really nice, and you more and more get there. and you get to stay there. And you notice yourself staying there more and more. And it's that's the process from my experience. And
that's excellent.
Yeah,
I think I needed this talk because I've been kind of wrestling with it lately. And it seems discouraging at times. So thank you for this talk.
Yeah, it's great. It's good to talk about it, really. I think a lot of people are going through these things, especially people who care. And, you know, even you know, good people, sometimes they go into bad situations and they get to find out where their weaknesses are. And they may go into survival mode. And when people go into survival mode, that realization really helped me not to take things so personally, because when people go into survival mode, a lot of times it's all about them. And some people have to be in it. They're in it from childhood. They don't know how to get out of it. They don't know how to create a life for themselves, so they're not in it all the time. And they just never get out of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they just never do. And so because of that, every man for himself. And when you realize it's not about you, it's about them being stuck in survival mode, that helps so much.
Or yourself.
Yes, yes.
I think,
well, that's how you recognize
it
when you've been in it, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, that's how you recognize it. Because we've all been in survival mode.
Wow, that is a real aha moment there for me. Thank you. Wow.
You're welcome.
Okay.
It was hard one, let me tell you.
So the striving bit, you just got to keep striving. I know that when I get up in the morning and if I'm not feeling, you know, particularly happy, that, okay, let's get in.
Isn't that the
and
worst time in the morning? Isn't that always the case in the morning? You're like, oh, man. You know, you just, all your negative thoughts are right there in the morning. I,
mean,
yeah,
I wonder
that.
If it kind of comes up subconsciously during sleep, you know, issues to address.
Oh, I don't know.
I totally...
That's funny because I'm disgustingly cheerful and energetic in the morning and it drives everybody nuts.
Well, I'm glad. Good for you.
Oh,
this can be our goal.
Well, I've learned to be, you know, like my husband wakes up more like, I guess, most people. I don't know. And he used to say, do you have to be so cheerful? And don't talk to me. I took it personally for a long time, and then I realized that's just who he is. And, you know, no, mine comes later in the day when I'm tired. But I get up in the morning, and I'm just like, yeah, you know, yay, it's time for a cup of coffee. And, yeah, it's kind of disgusting.
Goodness. Good for you. Gosh, you're my hero. That's my goal, to wake up cheerful and light. Airy fairy in the morning. Yeah. I sit there.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Drinking black coffee, thinking, oh, crap, you know.
I'd probably drive crazy.
Oh, I'm not that bad. I think it's mostly the times when, you know, there's not much going on, and I do have time to you know, dwell on things, you know, and that's when I get in trouble. Doesn't necessarily mean in the morning, but I think that the thing that I am facing right now is the things that have happened, not only in this park, but also on a personal level and some health issues. I injured myself very badly. It just keeps on coming, you know. It just seems like one problem after another. And I try and look on the bright side, but I'm thinking, okay, Ev, if you're master or trying to learn, you know, the might of thoughts and how your thoughts can create and manifest your life, good gosh, I'm not doing a very good job of it because it just keeps on coming. So I'm working it out as far as what is actually manifesting.
You're at the beginning of figuring it out is what you're doing.
Well, I think I have been for a while, and I keep thinking that, well, it's going to get a little bit smoother or more in balance, and wham, here comes another one, you know, and kind of knocks me off my feet again, and so I pick myself up and think in terms of, you know, all the teaching and all of this stuff, but I'm kind of going, there are times I have to confess that I feel like I have been a failure in the teaching. And I'm going, well, you know, I'm totally into all of this, the material and everything. But I am not doing very well in it. So,
you know, one of the things that I've read that really made a profound impact on me is we have an unconscious that actually thinks. And our unconscious, things we're not even aware of, can bring certain realities into our life. Do you remember a long time ago?
Go ahead. Sorry.
A long time ago, I did shows on the stigmata. There are people that, I don't know if anybody's doing this right now, but they can bring up the sign of the cross, will appear on their foreheads, bloody, you know, their eyes will start to bleed, all these weird things. And people used to think it was these holy religious experiences. And Billy just says, no, this is the power of these people's unconscious thoughts. Once they really accept religion wholeheartedly, even their unconscious accepts it, all of these weird things start happening. It's not that they want to. There's this lady, and it's in my notes somewhere, I think some from Austria. Every Friday she would literally bleed from her eyes, and she had the stigmata on her hands or something as well. This is the power of our unconscious thoughts.
Yes,
it's
but,
crazy.
You know, the thing is where I'm coming from is much more of a New Age background. I don't come from a, you know, hardcore religious background. And so when we're talking about that subconscious, the coming in and manifesting, that to me rings karma, some sort of a karma thing, you know. It's a mystery. And so I guess I have a hard time wrapping my mind around that sort of thing and not relating it to the New Age. Maybe I should get in and do a study on that and how the subconscious actually works.
Oh, the unconscious and the subconscious. Very, very interesting. I've never heard Billy use the term karma, but I think it's really interesting.
I think karma implies... I think the New Age karma implies that the person that you were in your previous life did things that you're dealing with now in this life, which that makes the difference right there, because there is no connection between the person that you were and the person that you are now. So that's kind of where the karma comes in. But that subconscious stuff has to come from somewhere.
Well,
and it has to come from the consciousness block.
Well, you know, it can also come from beliefs that we had as a child, that things were programmed, like life is hard, I don't deserve.
Yes.
You know, it's everything's a struggle. We may have gotten that from our parents without even them saying it. They can model it to us. And that I don't deserve is a big one. I don't deserve to be happy. I don't deserve to you know, be comfortable. Everything's got to come with a struggle. And I think, that trips a lot of people up, because really when it manifests, it's just cause and effect. So whatever is happening to you now has to do with something from the past.
Or something
you know?
That you're thinking subconsciously or unconsciously that you're not aware of. And you brought up a great example, and I think I'm guilty of this, Carol. Life is hard. Life is hard.
Oh, I know.
I bet you my
mom. Did all our parents do that? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yes. Money doesn't grow on trees and, you know, all the stuff they say to you. It's a dog-eat-dog world. All those things. And then you get to see sometimes it is, and it reinforces it, you know, when things become tough. But I tell my boys, our brains are wired to grow with adversity. So I don't know if this is any consolation to you, Ev, but when you go through a really tough time like you're going through now, it will pass. Just keep telling yourself it will, and it will. And when you come out the other end, you are so much stronger, you're so much wiser, and you're like, yeah, world, throw it at me, because I can handle it now. I mean, that's the end game, really. of those hard, that's been my experience through my life. Every time I go through one of those really hard times of, that are full of strife and lessons and mistakes and, you know, where you just really feel like you said, a failure, you think, I'm just failing 100% here. But really, are you? Or are you rewiring your brain to be able to handle those things that are really hard? Because what is coming in the future is going to, this is going to look like a cakewalk. And so we all need that mental toughness. And I don't mean, you know, callousness. I mean just that strength to deal with whatever comes our way. Neutrally.
Yeah. You know, well, it just seems like it's been going on for like my whole freaking life. But anyway, the thing that comes to mind in this talk that we're having now isn't it true, and please correct me, but the things that go into our personal storage banks are the things that have positive, actually. They are the things that we've learned, the wisdom, the knowledge, the love, and all of this thing. Or are the negative things or the things that we must learn also stored in the storage banks? I assumed that it was all of the things that we've learned in this lifetime that, you know, reflect the good and the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, from what I understand, everything is stored. Every thought, every eye blink, every movement, everything. That's why one of the reasons we have to learn to control our thinking, because whatever we think goes into the storage banks. Everything.
I always thought it was the good, the knowledge.
Can I interrupt
you? Yes,
let's not confuse two concepts here. Everything goes in the storage banks, good and bad, universal storage banks, planet storage banks, solar system. What you're thinking of, I think, Eve, is when we evolve, what happens is there are consciousness forms here on the earth, like during a given lifetime, love, a sense of honor, a sense of duty, confidence, enthusiasm, a sense of logic, discretion. Those are your evolutive values. That's what your spirit form absorbs during the time in the fine matter world, in between lives. That only goes forward with you. Your spirit form doesn't absorb all the negative things.
Well, that's what I was thinking of, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought. So in other words, in your own personal consciousness and what goes forward with you into the next life is not all the negative or the lessons that we've learned. It's all the wisdom, the knowledge, all of the good things that move forward.
Right.
It would seem.
Right.
Yeah.
The spirit form only absorbs that which is related to helping you evolve.
I think that some of the people in Figu that I have, you know, I read these, you know, long comments and all this stuff. I think there's a misconception on that in some people's minds. Because I even question it myself. You know, am I thinking this right? Or does everything go, you know, forward with you? You know, because your impulse, you know, from those storage banks at certain times when you can ignite, when you see it. I mean, I think that you're impulsed a lot, but you have to be balanced and in harmony in order to really kind of get it, understand it.
Okay, so from my understanding, this is a really good conversation to have because from my understanding, when someone, like they've given an example, when someone dies, like Hitler, or I'm not going to use Hitler because I haven't really talked about him, what he's doing right now, just that he's a kid somewhere. But say someone else dies and they were doing dastardly things in their life. And they come back into their next lifetime and they say they're up to the same things. So it was my understanding that both the negative and the positive impulses strike us, but it's up to us in our thinking which ones we follow.
Right.
Well, then that kind of completely contradicts the how I saw that happening, because I always assumed the exact opposite. It was all of the good, the knowledge, the wisdom, and everything that impulsed us. But yet, on the other hand, so it must have something to do with what we were talking about earlier, subconscious, you know what I mean, inner whatever mark, those you know, three different things, you know.
The negative and false things do go into the storage banks, the universal storage banks.
See, I'm totally confused now.
Well, that's because it's our consciousness.
That's my job.
If I understand this right, and Mark, tell me if I've got this right. It's your spirit knows, you know, it's not thinking, but what Mark said, as far as I understand, is correct, but it's our consciousness in our lifetime now that is hit by those impulses, and, you know, we have free will. And it's kind of like, I see it kind of like a tuner, and when we're tuned in to where we're more neutral, positive, it's much easier to receive those impulses that are the highest values, and when we're not, that's when the negative impulses, we're more likely to follow those. That's kind
very
of how I see it.
Very
so in other words, in order for our evolution of our spirit form, it is what we bring forward is the good values. But in the lifetimes, it's a completely sort of different system. It brings in good and bad, and you have the wisdom to either choose good or bad. So it's really
sort of two
different systems.
Yeah, because our spirit form and our consciousness are two different things.
Right.
You know, our consciousness block, I should say, is different from our spirit form. And sometimes people, I think, get those confused. And so the spirit form is, it's like a, you know, beautiful energy that, that you know, enlivens us and has all the, like Mark was saying, the highest values. And then we've got our consciousness block, and it's got both of, you know, and that's how we learn. Because if we didn't have the negative, we wouldn't make mistakes. And we must make mistakes to learn. And that, if you were raised in a life where you were not allowed to make mistakes, I was raised that way, that mistakes were not permissible. So that creates, that's a whole show, what that creates. And so if we're raised with that, we try to deny them. We beat ourselves up endlessly when we make them. And that's one of the biggest lessons I had to learn is it's okay that you make mistakes. You have to. You can't avoid it. If you're going to, you know, even those people who are so afraid of making mistakes that they don't live, that's a mistake. You know, they're so afraid. They become extremely controlled and perfectionistic and don't want to take any chances or do anything because they're so afraid they're going to make a mistake. Well, there's a mistake. You can't avoid them. We must make them to learn. So there has to be those negative impulses also. Because we must make mistakes to grow, to learn. And as it's explained in the teaching, that we think we're making the same mistake over and over again, but we're not. It's a shifted facet. Each mistake, if you really analyze it, is a little different. I mean, it is probably just so nuanced how small the change is, you know. But we have to make, it's kind of like a theme that we make the same mistake over, but we're not. It's shifting, so that we learn every facet of that error, so that eventually we do not make that mistake. That's the way I understand it.
Ah, so
very
no wonder we're, yeah. I think that I didn't really have those two things clear in my mind. I think it's become clearer. That's great.
That's what's such a satisfying, rich thing to discuss, isn't it? And think about is the teaching, because there's so, it's such a steak dinner for the mind. There's just so much good information. That's how I feel about it. I always feel really fed mentally, emotionally, you know, when I read it. I just do. It's just so satisfying, unlike anything else I've ever studied. And I've looked at a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's why it takes us so many lifetimes, you know.
I was just going to say, wonder
it's a snail's pace, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a snail in a world where we all want everything right now.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick Chanot said something to me once at the center. He looked at me. I was in angst over something, and he looks at me and he said, "Carol, patience." And for something that really struck me, I actually really heard him. He said, "You must be patient. Patient with yourself, patient." And I just really struck me. I thought, he's right. I'm not being patient enough. Absolutely.
Was it you, Carol, or was it someone else? Someone told me within the past week or two something that was really profound. I can't remember if it was you or maybe Daniel Cooper on Skype or whatever. I can't remember. But maybe it was you that you were talking to Patrick at the center, and you know, you're talking about all the books that Billy had, and you expected that he would have read them all. Was that you?
No.
But he really only read a couple.
Yeah.
But what he said, whoever told me that, I can't remember who it was, said that Patrick said, "No, I've only read this one, and I continue to study this one, because I think it'll take the rest of my life for me to really understand this one, and I want to really understand one rather than read them all and not understand them." You know what I'm saying? Was it you?
Right.
Was it you?
No, it wasn't me, but I was actually there when he said it, because it was Rem. I was actually there at the center when he said it. So I'm pretty sure it was Rem, and I was there when Rem asked the question. And that struck me also, and I've heard a couple of other people say that too. And I think there's so many books, so little time, but we're all different, and you know, I think we'll gravitate. All the books tend to have some of the same things in them. Although I would say for anyone going through, do you have The Psyche, Ev?
I do.
The book, okay. For me,
and it's
that
very
book,
difficult for me to read.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Very, very hard book for me to read.
That's the hardest one. That's the most
really?
Profound book.
Really? It is, too. Mm-hmm.
I read the first 20 pages about 15 times just to understand the basic
See how
category.
Different we are. Yes. I thought that was an excellent book for healing the psyche. Such a great book for healing the psyche.
Maybe I'll open it up again.
Well, you know, there's something in there that's so simple that Billy recommends that you go, that you think when your mind is churning, Mark, like what we were just talking about earlier, and you're on those negative mm-hmm. thoughts that go round and round and round. He said it. Think a wish dream. So think of something beautiful that you want. It doesn't matter what it is. Castles in the air. Just anything beautiful, something you want, how you want the world to be. And I don't mean in a way of, I wish it was different. Just, you know, go to that fantasy of whatever it is you want. He said at first your mind will resist it, and he's right. It does. It fights. It says, no, I want to stay in this negative churning. But if you keep taking your mind there to those beautiful wish dreams, eventually you kind of wear the negative side down and it starts to go there more easily. And that's very healing to the psyche. It allows you to stop the painful thoughts that you're having and have these beautiful imaginings. And think about it. We all did that as a child. It's such a natural healing thing to daydream. And we all did it when we were younger, and for some reason when we get older, we don't daydream as much. And daydreaming is very healing to the mind and to the psyche. And then he also recommended going out into the woods and singing at the top of your lungs, and it works. It's great. You know, just go out there and sing. Just, he said, sing something joyful, and it really is very helpful. And that sounds so simple, but it's very effective.
It's very conflicting for me because, like I mentioned before, I don't come from a religious background, and I think that it would be easier. I come from a more new age, and so many of these concepts that you're talking about right now are very new agey sounding to me. And so, I think of them as more like airy-fairy kind of a thing, where if I had been brought up religious and looked at the material and seen, you know, the evidence, the material, the really, you know, if I'd come from that perspective, I could see the falseness of it so much more clear. It would be easier on me.
Oh.
Because
okay.
I do come from like a Buddhist background, a new age background. So many of these kinds of, you know, concepts,
well,
you know, there's
well, don't
a little
forget.
Bit different.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, though, that throughout all of these, so I went and I studied lots of things, everything from Judaism. I mean, I went down every road looking at everything. And what I noticed is, there are, and I said something about there being gems in a book that was had a lot of falseness. I mentioned something about that last time. And they just shine like gems, like breadcrumbs to the truth. That's how it worked for me, is I would recognize those things that were true. You know, they would just resonate. I would say, this is logical. This makes sense. It doesn't matter if it's in a book full of swill. That's what draws people to those books, are those, even in the Bible, those truths.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so all the other stuff falls away slowly as, you know, you make your way down the path. And so this path of glittering breadcrumbs led me to the teaching. Because once I found the teaching, I said, yes, this book is, these books, this way of thinking, I see this sprinkled throughout all the religions, all the New Age stuff. I mean, for a couple of years, I really dove into the New Age world, trying to understand if any of it was true, if, you know, and I found a lot of falseness and true things. But I noticed that's, you know, the stuff like, oh, your angels are going to guard you and all this, you know, that's... But really,
I'm running out of battery, guys. So I'm gonna sign off here. I just got the final beep, I think.
Okay.
So it was great talking to you. Thank you both so much, and thank you for inviting me on, Mark.
Thanks, Eve. We'll see you.
Okay. Nice to talk
Bye-bye.
To you, Ev.
Yeah,
Bye.
It has been. Bye.
You know, Carol, you say her name correctly. I always call her Eve for some reason. I don't know why.
That's okay. Well, it's Evelyn, but she goes by Ev for
Evelyn.
Short. Yeah.
Evelyn. You know,
that'll
and she
help.
Was saying
yeah.
something. She was saying something for some reason. This little joke came into my mind because she kept saying, I just want this to pass. I can't wait for this to pass. And I had this vision of...
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I'm sitting in the commode saying the same thing. I want this. My boss. So, you know, how corrupt I am. I'm totally lost.
Yeah, it's kind
no
of the same thing
value.
In a way.
It is.
Things get backed up, you know. And
yeah,
but,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
I, whenever things are really bad, I always... try to remind myself, this too shall pass, because it does.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then you get to examine your actions, your thinking. Of course, first that comes, then the actions, right? The feelings, the emotions,
yeah.
whichever is going on, and then the actions follow. And so you get to see, what is it, that's the hard work. What is it that I'm doing that is creating these situations, because most of what happens to us is from our own doing. You know,
It's true.
There are things, of course, if a meteor falls out of the sky and hits you, well, your own doings took you to that spot, of course, but, you know, you didn't actually make the meteor fall on you. But
isn't that
interesting? You know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
And I think people have a hard time understanding that, you know, we are responsible. It's a hard thing to look at when everything's crap around you and you go, how did I get here? What you have to go back and look at your life and say, what steps, what choices did I make? And, you know, Daniel Cooper and I were talking about this once, that when you're upset with situations or how people are treating you or whatever, sometimes you can go back when you realize you shouldn't take things so personally and you really get it, and it really stays with you and you're able to carry that with you. You can actually take that and go back in your past and re-examine the way people treated you, and you can see most of the time it had nothing to do with you. Nothing. You just happened to be the person there at the moment, and they took their unhappiness out on you.
And, you know,
and
I've done the same
thing. And if it did have something to do with you, you get to look at that too.
Right. I have been guilty of taking my unhappiness out on others at times.
Oh, everyone has. There's no one on this planet that hasn't. That's, you know, everyone. We all have. And we get to look at that and say, oh, you know. And isn't it so much easier, too, and freeing if you, the minute you do it, too, you go, this is me. Don't take this personally. I mean, I said that to my own kids. Look, I'm in a bad mood. This isn't you. This is just me in a bad mood. And then their faces immediately lighten up like, oh, okay. You know, because we all tend to think it's us, you know.
Yeah.
And it isn't.
Yeah.
That's actually a form of self-centeredness, that if we think everything that happens is because of something we did, you know, we aren't really that important and powerful, really. I mean, come on. You know what I mean? When we say, oh, this is all about me and I did this, not necessarily. A lot of times it has really nothing to do with you. It just
doesn't. Interesting. Very, very interesting. Sometimes it's hardest to forgive yourself.
Oh, yes. Well, and
at least
if
I
you don't, though, yes. Oh, it is the hardest. That's why the teaching says if you can't love yourself, you can't love other people. And that is so true. There's no way. Unless we can forgive ourselves and accept who we are and be loving toward ourselves, you know, and look at our mistakes in a gentle but realistic way and understand we are learning. Hold ourselves to, of course, our responsibility, and then move on and learn from it. Then we can do that for others. But until we do it for ourselves, we really can't do it for others.
Good thoughts. Very interesting thoughts. A lot longer conversation than we originally planned, but good nonetheless. I appreciate you coming on, Carol, and I'm so glad that Eve came on for a while and chatted with us as well. I'll probably be back on this weekend for more shows. Folks, keep listening. I can tell the archives are just exploding, and I appreciate everyone that's listening to the show. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll see you next time.